Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening to once again to another edition of Religion Means a Lot. We have a very powerful discussion. Two fine young men who are products of the community, Imam Debbie Dean Muhammad, with us, met them at the Muslim Mosque Cares Convention, and I'm happy to have them with us today. And I'm going to ask Brother Madyun to give us an opening statement, then we will follow by Brother Rahman. And as you give opening statements, tell us your line of profession, what you're in, what type of work you do, and where you're from.
Okay. Well, good afternoon. Assalamu alaikum. God's peace be upon you. My name is Ikra Madyun. I'm currently residing in Charlotte, North Carolina, by way of Brooklyn, New York, and Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So most of my time has been spent, my adult years have been spent in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm a young man's father of three, so I've got a lot of social issues that I'm dealing with as one, a black man coming up in America, especially with all of the things that you hear about in the news. So that's very close to me, the Ferguson issue, and just the state of our people. And it does seem like there may be an assault on the African-American male, and we play a role in that. So, I'm very passionate about that. Currently working for one of the big three banks, national banks, if you will. I'm a team lead on the retirement arm of the bank. Pretty much we're a team of consultants. Our goal is to educate our participants upon separation of their companies, let them know what they can do with their retirement plans, and our hope is to retain the assets. I do have an entrepreneurial spirit, so I've got a couple things that I'm looking to do on my own, because I ultimately got into the business of retirement because I'm interested in wealth building. And I feel like, you won't build wealth if you're working for someone else. So launching a clothing line, Demographics is the name, and I hesitate to call it a clothing line because I don't really want to box it in. But it's just basically an expression of who you are, your demographic. So as a, 33-year-old black male, I fall into a different, specific demographic. I'm interested in art, if you will, right now in fashion that represents you. So brief synopsis of who I am. Yes, sir. And I'll pass to Fareed Rahman.
Yes, thank you, Brother Fareed Rahman. Waiting for Brother Fareed to respond, but we're speaking with Brother Madyun and Brother Fareed Rahman. These are two young men. I think.
Assalamu alaikum.
Yeah, wa alaikum assalam.
Sorry about that. I thought you could hear me out there.
Yes,
I want to say assalamu alaikum to the community.
Yes, sir.
And I want to follow up with saying that I appreciate you for taking the time to have us on the show, Imam Alfred. Again, it was through your meeting that we met at the convention that, you expressed some of the concerns that you had and how you believe our generation could address those concerns. And I think that just that understanding of, we have a role to play and we have work to do is what is refreshing, and knowing that, someone of your generation is looking upon us to carry that work. I'll start by giving a little background about myself. I'm also from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, born and raised. Went to college in 1998 at UNC Charlotte, and I spent some time there. I actually call the QC my new home now. After college, I did get a chance to live in Harlem for about 5 years. I moved to Harlem, as well as I live in other parts of New Jersey, so I spent some time up north, about 10 years up north, and always I worked out of in New Jersey, Paramus, New Jersey, and I worked for AT&T at the time, so had a little time in corporate America, but I've always had an interest in technology and a background in entrepreneurship, and so with that, you know, I like to think that that was just probably my training facility. But once I no longer, you know, once I got out of that environment, I partnered with a few brothers. I've got some endeavors with Brother Ikras on the phone. I've known him since college. But we also have a few other partners in other areas, such as we do farmers market, and other ventures. But what I'm here for is, you know, my passion, my love is in technology. And that's something that I've been, you know, fortunate enough to be involved in my whole life. And that's an area where, you know, I think that I can benefit our community. And the concern that I have is that, you know, we're not utilizing technology the way other groups out there using technology. And so from that, I founded a company called Majestic Technology Group. And the basis of that company is just, you know, technology supporting human life or technology supporting community life. And what we want to do is get involved in any area that, you know, we as Muslims or any community life, you know, faith-based communities out there that, you know, can benefit from the use of technology to provide healthy alternatives for, you know, the content that is being displayed across mobile devices or television platforms, to give, you know, our youth and to give our other brothers and sisters, whether they're Muslims or not, to give them the opportunity to not only have a choice between, you know, all of the what we like to call not so good content, and whether it's games or videos, et cetera. We're going to give them a choice to choose something that's more good for their soul. So that's a little bit about myself and the concern that I have.
Well, you know, I think this is very interesting. I'm glad I'm resonating with you all. I, you know, I'm competing. Somebody said one time I was at an event and I was shaking hands. They said, "What are you running for? What office are you running?" I said, "I'm running for being the chillest imam on earth." The images of imams other than Imam W.D. Muhammad has been an image, in my opinion, has been a bad image. I think black preachers in general, whether they've got a pork chop in their mouth or a bean pie in their hands, really have given a bad name to the Sam Proctors, the Imam W.D. Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the other great preachers of our people that was for uplifting our people. So it has created a problem, and I've worked since I was a child to kind of change that image. So I appreciate your comment. I want to now turn our attention really with you men who are entrepreneurs. I see you all competing with the Jay-Z's, competing with Mr. Combs, competing with all the Rick Rosses for establishing us as a people and as a culture. I'm going to first start. One is you brothers in technology, and it's a technology that's very dear to my heart. You have an app that let us find different messages. Why don't you tell us about that? And then I want to, Brother Matt Yoon, I started to call you Brother Pender Matt Yoon, but I knew your father, but Ibn Pender, but you stand on your own independently. Well, I have to be the son.
I won't take
of.
Offense.
Yes, sir. But I want you all to tell us what you all, starting with Brother, well, Pender was, I believe, the last Rock Mama's last, but I want you all to tell us, I like that idea of demographics. You know, I like that. That sounds much better than hip-hop. You know, I always tell people, if you're hip, why would you hop? You know, when I was growing up, they said, I'm hip. That means you were aware. Then you would hop from it. So that's great. So would you discuss demographics and a particular style that you're introducing? And then we'll follow by Brother Rockman talk about his technology. Your own religion means alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred. And you can join the conversation. This is not going to be a one-way show. Just dial 805-727-7013. Those of you listening by browser, Those who are already on the line, listen by smartphone. Just press one on your phone, and at any second, you will be connected to two of the greatest men that ever walked the earth. These men, I'm sure, will compete as the fashion statements of the world. They will compete in technology. And I say, as Imam Muhammad said, it ain't no stopping us now. You know, we cannot be stopped now, neither will we be stopped. Continue.
True indeed, true indeed. Well, for me, fashion has always been something that I've been, I guess, attracted to, you know, as a consumer. And I think all too many times as I look at my life, my community, you know, I asked my kids, you know, a couple weeks ago, what is it that the African-American produces? And they, you know, they looked at me like, you know, I was speaking French or something to them. But we are heavily, you know, looked at as consumers, and that is because we do consume. And I'm one of those, obviously, that do as well. But I started thinking about it, and I said, you know, these fashion lines that are out here, they're nothing more than a name in most cases. The quality isn't great. There's no real story to tell other than if you hear a rapper, they're talking about how much the shirt cost and things of that nature, which, you know, for the majority of people, they'll never be able to or never know, you know, how it feels to buy a $1,000 shirt, nor is it an aspiration of theirs. So really, this is to help the young folks that are coming up. They're the ones that set the trends. So it came about for me because I do have a 13-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son, and they're into the hip-hop, if you will, arena. They both are into dance, hip-hop dance. So I'm starting to see a lot of the trends that are coming out. But I didn't want them to be the ones that were following the trends. I wanted them to take some time to think about words. You know, too often we use words and they really don't have any meaning, or we chop a word off, we shorten it up and things of that nature, so we really don't get to understand the meaning of a word. Demographics, to me, is a very powerful word. It's a study of the, you know, a group of people. Again, I happen to care very dearly for the group of people that happen to be in my demographic. But I also think that through fashion, you can tell a story. I think that I would consider myself somewhat of an artist. I may not be able to sing. I may not be able to draw very well, but I think God has blessed me with being able to understand words and, you know, word plays and things of that nature. So I wanted to be able to show that graphically. And I want my son to be able to demonstrate or articulate, maybe it's, again, through fashion, what his demographic stands for. And more than just, you know, okay, I'm 13 and I'm a black male, but I've got a story to tell. And I want you to know that everything that you see on TV and on these videos about black males aren't true, and the same for my daughter. And just in general, you know, if you're a 40-year-old white man, you know, you have a demographic, and you may be artistic and may not have a way to express your artistic abilities, and this is an outlet. So that's ultimately what I would like it to be. It's a way for me to it's an outlet for me, and, again, a way for me to try to reach the youth, to get them to think beyond being consumers of the and following the fad. So let's start making the trends instead of following the fad. And because the difference between me, Rick Ross, and, you know, those individuals that you had mentioned before, from what I can see, and I don't know what they do as far as giving to the community, but I have a very deep sense of responsibility to my community, and I know that the principles that I was raised on, they won't allow me to have $20 million in the bank and have my neighbor starving, or, you know, some of these in social ills that we have. When I get money, I won't be able to just sit back on my money. I'll be employing people. So that's the goal. We need to use the money, you know, keep as much of it as we need to survive. And the rest of it is supposed to be put back to use in the community, and that's my ultimate goal.
Yeah, Yes, Brother Rahman?
As it relates to technology and Mujaddid Technology Group, you know, the first product that was put out is the prayer time application. It's also titled Mujaddid. It's a community-based application. You know, designed, when I say community-based, it's because it's designed specifically for Imam Muhammad's community and our community, and that we need to have a voice out here. And so, like you mentioned, you know, as far as competing with, you know, other entities, if there's, you know, if it's in music, if it's in fashion, we also have to compete in technology. And there ain't but so much space that is, you know, that a person can have. And when you look at that space, I have two sons, and they're on their digital devices. They have iPads. They own computers. They own all these things. Everybody's competing for the same amount of, you know, time on your screen, whether it's television, whether it's on your phone, whether you think you could be playing games, or even in the for this religious application. And I just thought about how I've always had prayer time applications where you have voices calling us to pray, and they have, you know, or they'll have a master finder in it or something. But, you know, the masters that were listed, I could be standing inside of Imam Muhammad master, and it wouldn't be listed in that application. Or the voice, you know, the muezzin was calling us to pray, and yeah, we respond to that, but that voice has been projected, whether someone hears it that's Muslim or non-Muslim. You know, as Muslims, we hear the muezzin, and we know what he's saying, and we know that it's a call for us to go, you know, make salat. But we could be in our, you know, corporate offices, or we could be having lunch with a colleague, or we could be at a concert, or we could be at a basketball game, and these applications are always, they're going off. But the voice that was being projected is not the voice that, you know, represents the African American, doesn't represent the indigenous Muslim in America, doesn't represent those who follow the leadership of Imam Muhammad. And that's important, because being American and African American and, you know, part of this community, I know that I think we have the best voice out here. In terms of not talking about from a standpoint of, you know, how our beautiful voice, I'm talking about they recognize who we are. We're part of this. So as that application is going on, and it's a, you know, an immigrant Muslim who's giving the call, will someone who's non-Muslim, how well do they identify with that? You know, there's an accent with that. There's a different sound that they have. Versus, you know, when there's a voice that comes from the same perspective that, you know, an American would know. So I think I looked around, I just said, we don't have a voice in this space. You know, everybody uses these utilities all the time, because we all need to know what time is Asr, you know, and you have a reminder of that. And we all need to know where's the nearest masjid if we're out of town. I remember living in, you know, New Jersey, parts of New Jersey, and wanting to know, well, where's the closest Imam Muhammad masjid at, and not being able to pull out something real quick and find out if I'm 5 minutes away from one, or if it's even one in, you know, in the area, you know, and that's a lonely feeling. So sometimes you say, well, I need to go make salat, or I'm just trying to go to Juma, I'll go to, you know, any masjid. But when we call people to, you know, what we believe is the best teachings, and we know that we want them to not only respond to our voices, we want to be able to direct them to our messages, because the message that we, you know, are getting is clear, and it's the best message that, you know, the Muslim in America could need. You know, it's that message that is needed. You know, it's coming from someone who will understand the struggles that they're dealing with and the issues that they're dealing with. And so I wanted to put together a tool that could help with that. And so that's where the idea for the Mujaddid prayer time application came from. But after, you know, finishing that, you know, I felt like we still have a lot of work to do. And that's just why I said, you know, yeah, we're going to compete in all, for all of this screen space, you know, inshallah. We want to make sure that there's an alternative that could be to any, you know, not just with, and I say this, not just with religion applications or utilities. We're talking about in education, there's things that need to happen, whether it's books, you know, or entertainment. We have a lot of young people out here that's making real good content, but they can't get their content distributed on the right platform. So we want to have a way for them to do that. So it's just it started with the prayer time application, but it has expanded to just being a technology company that is dedicated to support community life, and that's where we're at.
I appreciate that, and you know, I was at the masjid with Imam Muhammad. We were sitting in the masjid that remained anonymous, and they had an African brother called Nadan. And so Imam Muhammad said to me, he said, you never have any other people calling you to civilization. And Nadan is symbolic of civilization call. You heard four Allahu Akbar, you heard the four rivers, education, business, culture, government. So how should anyone call you to that but yourself? We have a caller from 856-207. You're on the air. This means a lot.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ibrahim from New Jersey calling in.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Wa alaikum assalam, Brother Ibrahim from New Jersey. What say you?
You said what? Yeah, I just wanted to tune in.
What's on your mind, Brother Ibrahim? I know you helped us. You're part of that same spirit that put the Kaaba together. So let's hear what you got to say today.
Okay. I just wanted to chime in because I felt like the context of the conversation was so on point and so relevant for our time, you know, trying to utilize technology to affect the and development of our community is something that's near and dear to my heart as well. I think...
You share with us what you're feeling, Devil. We heard from the other brothers, the technology and merchandising and... I mean, you know, let me just tell you this. I am honored that the many years that I sacrificed in this community, I feel like it has been fulfilled, and you phenomenal and exceptional great men. I'm not going to say you're a young man because you all have children like I do, and so I don't put you as young. You're a man, and we're in a male society. And we're gonna tease out this discussion to discuss African American men in Ferguson, Missouri. But I just want you to continue, Ibrahim, and tell us what line of endeavor you're in, and we're gonna move it to another round and discuss just where our people are at.
Okay. Brief bio. My background is for a number of years I've come up through the Electricians Union, International Brotherhood of Electricians, running large projects and I'm working in many facets in the development from the construction point and construction from the perspective of developing communities, work with a number of different organizations in and out of the union, worked with a number of different political entities to get the agenda of those organizations accomplished and recognized a lot of techniques and things that were being used in those environments to accomplish their goals. And I wanted to take those in my heart. I thought it was important that I take the skills that I learned in that field and the techniques that I watched them execute as far as moving their agendas forward and bring that back to our community and try to apply those techniques strategically to advance our cause and our goals. So that being said, I've started my own company, Licensed Master Electrician in Philadelphia and New Jersey, and I try to apply those skills, and my overall objective in game is to try to train as many of our people as we can in the fields that I entertain in and work in, and then try to have an impact in developing infrastructure in that area, because a lot of people don't know that industry, people working in that industry are actually outperforming most people in cubicles in the cubicle financially, and we don't have enough representation in that arena. And we have a large group of our young men in the African American community who would like an alternative to college, but an alternative that is challenging and is going to stimulate their mind and allow them to provide for their families. So that's kind of where I fit in. I kind of bridge the gap between technology. I do have a degree in IT degree out of Rutgers, and I also do electrical work. But it just so happens when I got my degree, I was already working in the union and making twice what I was started at and with my college degree. So I've stayed in that lane. But that being said, I do a lot of work with systems integration, utilizing technology, utilizing applications, doing building automation, video matrixing, whole house sound, things like that. One of the things that's on my heart and on my mind right now is trying to assemble a team of young men, train them on how to install some of these surveillance systems and deploying that across our network, because as you've seen in the convention and some of the stories that was told, I feel like that's a need in our community. So that's a conversation that I'm interested in having. But I think that technology, and I think that the taking charge of our opportunities and having the mindset that we're going to make our own playing field by our own rules is I think where we're going to find success.
I agree with you. I'm going to go around the round robin with each of you to discuss the state of black men. It's a hell of a thing when you see an African American man killed by a policeman, and he lies on the street for approximately 6 hours uncovered. Dr. Michael Batten, which is probably one of the is the foremost forensic pathologist. We call him coroners just regular parlance, but in medical parlance, a forensic pathologist is one who actually examines the remains of people and determine legal questions. And he said that there's no reason why Mr. Brown should have been in the streets. I'm very disturbed that Muslims from our community, and Muslims in general, African Americans in particular, haven't become more forceful on this issue. And if you all support us with Religion Means Alive, we are not going to wait for Al Sharpton. We're not going to wait for Jesse Jackson to make his pronouncements or our pronouncements on it. We're going to make pronouncements on this. And we're planning to actually go to Ferguson next month after all the dust has settled and the clouds have disappeared and talk to the people of Ferguson outside of NBC, CBS, and CNN. So would each of you brothers take a shot at it? Well, don't take a shot, take a round at it, because we're getting shot at and drowned at it. But just give us your own take on the state of being an African-American man. And I particularly want to emphasize what Brother Ibrahim just said. The only way you enter America is through three ways, through the professions, through the trades, and through business. And when we can get enough African-American men, in particular, to come through these three doors, we will be at the table. And we have to lock arms and elbow our way to the table, because believe you, some ethnic groups are not about to give it up. And we're going to say to them, just like James Brown said, give it up, turn it loose. So with those words, I want you all to make comments before we open the phone lines back up. Your own Religion Means Alive with Imam Alfred, and we have him guest, Brother Ibrahim, Brother Rahman, Brother Matt Yoon, and you can be also part of this great discussion on Religion Means Alive.
I don't know who's going first.
Oh, you can go ahead, Brother Ibrahim.
Okay. With respect to the incident in Ferguson, I mean, that the leaving of the body in the street, to me, echoed the sentiments of, you know, the old philosophy and psychology of Willie Lynch. I mean, that to me, the idea of leaving that body there was to send some type of resonating message of the lack of worth in the future outcome of anybody who stood against the police force down there. I think it was symbolic. The other part about it that disturbed me was the, I've been trying to kind of process this myself, is the fact that the body was left there for so long by other people. That nobody actually addressed the fact that the body was laying there. It just seemed to me that after a period of time that some dignity should have been given to the body. But, that's my take on it. I feel like that was a deliberate attempt to have an impact, by law enforcement to leave and discard the body the way without any dignity, to send a message to the community. And it troubles me deeply.
I'll go next. It's obviously troubling as an African-American male myself, a black man myself, a father of a 12-year-old black male. The lack, we were once, three-fifths a man based on, the rules of the governing bodies in these United States of America. Seems like the shackles maybe have been taken off, but there's still an assault on, young black males, whether it's by or at the hand of another black male or police. Obviously we are definitely we're definitely being targeted. And I think that's, the targeting is unexplainable, if you will. The fact of the matter is that we have to, one, recognize that we are worth, something ourselves. We have worth, we have value. I think obviously the lack of knowledge of self, history, if you think about the traditions that we have in these United States of America, for the most part, they're traditions that were given to us by the same people who enslaved us, or, our ancestors of the people who enslaved us at some point. So that right there, just not knowing what your lineage was, who you came from. So that's devastating in itself. So I don't think that we understand our worth. I don't think that, we've got a month of black history. February, my kids go to a predominantly black public school, and I ask them what they learn about black history, and they say they don't learn much. So you would think, especially in a black, predominantly black school, you would learn about the contributions that your forefathers or ancestors have made. So, one, the picture that we're given as success typically is either someone who's on the street corner selling drugs. He gets money, he gets women, and to a young person, a young male, that's what you're looking for, because you don't know that there is more out there or better out there. Or if you do have an athlete, again, you see the same thing, fast money, fast cars, flashy lives, women. One of the things that I feel strongly about is that, a lot of times when we have dignified black males or black people in general, whether it be doctors, lawyers, a lot of these people came from impoverished conditions. But a lot of them, the first opportunity they get, they obviously remove themselves from the filth and the, the muck and the mire that is, associated with our, communities. But they don't, a lot of times, and I'm not going to, paint a broad stroke, but a lot of times they don't make themselves identifiable to the people, in the communities that they were in. I know several people myself. I didn't grow up in, in projects or anything like that. I was a middle class. I came up in a middle class home, two-parent home. My parents were, people who were interested in education. But obviously I knew a lot of people who didn't come up in those type of environments. And, it takes a very strong-minded person who knows what, at least what they don't want, not to follow down that same path. So that's the first thing. I think we obviously don't have a great sense of worth. But then, you know, I guess the difference between, you know, me as a black male shooting another black male because of a domestic incident or because of gang violence or whatever the case may be, that is wrong. But when we have people in place, an educator is supposed to be held to a higher standard. So if I have a student in school and they're not acting right, the educator is not supposed to get on the student's level. That doesn't change because you become a police officer or because you're in the military. Again, you have a responsibility to protect and serve. And I think too often, and this is, again, not everybody, but too often we get people in the community or in these positions who are just as much inundated with the stereotype of the black male as we are and, you know, what we may perpetuate, but they feel like there is no value. You don't see value, so I don't see value. But if you're in customer service, I've been in customer service, and as a civil servant, I believe you're in a line of customer service. Again, you have a responsibility to be on a higher level, you know, than the folks that you're policing, if you will. So I think that's a big factor. In fact, you know, if I ride up down the street and somebody's in the middle of the street, you know, should I be cussing at them to get out of the street, or should I ask them to, you know, to move to the side of the street? Again, if I'm unarmed as a civilian, and it's apparent that I'm unarmed, and just because we may have had a brush up, and I don't know that that was the case, but because we may have had a brush up, and I start to retreat, at what point do you still have the right to pursue me like I'm armed, you know? Again, I think all too often we are obviously we're people. We have feelings, but when you're in those type of positions where you can take life you know, you get paid to be, again, an officer or whatnot, I feel like you have a higher responsibility. So those are the things that really trouble me with, you know, that situation and others. So that's my take on it.
Yes, I guess I'll try to. And I mean, these two brothers, and I've shared with. Anytime I meet with, it seems like any of our brothers from my generation, man. I mean, I think we share the same experiences, and a lot of times I can even let them and feel comfortable saying, "Man, look, man, you speak for me," because you're gonna say a lot of things, but you said a lot of things that I wholeheartedly agree with. And not even realizing it, you know, Brother Ibrahim made the point of how it resonated like the old lynchings, and you sit there and a body is hanging there. And it's that message is clear for anybody who sees that. I mean, it's like that's the value they place on our life. It's nothing. You can sit there in the street for hours dead. You know, let everybody know this is what's going to happen to you if you get out of line or if you don't do what we say you do. So subconsciously, it did send a message to me, and I realized even with this whole incident that's been going on in Ferguson, and I'm not the most – I haven't been as up to date on every detail about it, but it did make me think about how much of – my life has been affected subconsciously by the way, you know, the society values African-American life. You know, I think about some of the situations that I've been in, and I haven't been in many, but where I had to really think cautiously that if I do so, I mean, if I could just get pulled over by the police, you know, or they're just asking me a question or something, just being very careful about how I respond and how I project myself, because I don't want to end up, you know, in a situation that even though it didn't merit them to do anything, but them feeling justified by taking things into their own hands or whatever they want to do. And I'm saying I'm coming from a perspective, somebody who I've never, you know, been intrigued by the life of crime or committing crimes or any of that. But still, I'm African American male. I'm in America. I know that these are things that there's a certain way that you have to move out here, and it's happening. We just learned that behavior. You know, nobody had to sit me down and teach me those things. And then I got two sons, and they're coming up, so I'm sure they're going to have the same type of concerns that I have for them. So I'm just coming, you know, looking at this and saying we got to do. Yeah, that was completely wrong. But we have to give our people a better message. We can't be responsive all the time. We got to be more proactive. And I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are working hard to be proactive, but they're not getting their message across for some reason. But as soon as a tragedy happens, I'm not accusing people of being ambulance chasers, but it's kind of like, okay, now we're going to get there, we're going to do this, we're going to work on that. And I wonder if a lot of that is just smoke and mirrors. You know, we as Muslims, we could take it outside of the confines of just being African American. As soon as a terrorist attack happens, then we start to be more vocal and respond and speak out against those things because it there's an attack against Islam now because of some small sect, you know, some group that's doing something that's un-Islamic. Well, I don't want us to keep waiting until bodies keep dying and things keep happening. And like you said, Imam, all, you know, there's three ways into America. And if whatever way we're entering, whether it's in education and business or, you know, politics, whatever ways we're entering, we have to be conscious enough to say that as I'm entering through this door, but I got to also make sure it's going to project a message that invites our people to something better, you know, because otherwise we just going to keep seeing the bodies on the TV and we're going to keep responding at that time, but we got to get it before it happens. You know, we got to start getting involved and changing some of the laws and changing some of the issues that happen. We got to get people out the streets if they feel like, you know, the streets is the only way. We got to give them opportunities, like the brother said, trying to put together. Even the fact he said that in his field, they, you know, African Americans compete and are more effective than, you know, other employees. But that's a message that you wouldn't know. Why is that? It could be a reason why we're more inclined to have that, to be more successful in that area. But we need to get those messages out there. Invite, let's go. You know, got to get them to come to learn this trade and be able to be productive. And I think that's where we're at, because the messages that we're seeing now all day, every day, on the television screen or on the internet or anywhere is a different way of life that tells you that, you know, like Ikra said, you're going to be either, you know, go to the street route, go to, you know, try to get money illegally and all this stuff. And we know that that's the messages that they're projecting, and that doesn't speak for all of us, but that's what they're inviting us to, and we got to invite people to something else.
That's 100% right. I agree with you, 1,000%. You know, and that's what you're doing with demographics, what you're doing with media. We have a caller from 917-756. You're on the air with Religion Means Alive.
Yes, peace be unto you, brothers. How you
peace
doing?
Peace on you.
This is Brother Ishmael Kadar.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to
go.
Thank you so much, good brothers. Yeah, man. I'm listening to the show. Working on a little project at the same time, but you brothers are inspiring me. And I just want to say, I want to add to the conversation, if I could, real quick. First, I want to say, I want to congratulate the brother Farouk for a great project serving the community. Technology, we need to really advance in that area. And I'm glad to see him take that stance and with the brothers he's working with all the brothers. But the second thing I really want to add to is I think that Ferguson is an example of what the man said a few years ago prior to the man. He said that if we didn't get more serious with this value of community life, he said our lives wouldn't even be in a few years that we the young people, our lives wouldn't even be valued at all. And he said that, you know, you can see it in the videos. I mean, you can see it in the Walkman. They got a, they actually cloning people. You know, we got a lot of clones. So on a one level, major level, like I'm from New York, so I've seen Sean Bell get hit 47 times, and the leaders were, you know, real vocal about it. And it was a kid that happened, something happened in Morningside last Saturday with a young brother. But what I'm seeing is that this is two things. One thing is the people are crying, and the people are being real vocal, which they should, because any life we have should be respected, and we should respect life ourselves. But also the leaders, I feel that the leaders are not alert to the fact that they should really be educating the masses of people that if we do say we're not getting no justice, we do say that this is unjust and this is the Pharaoh, what some people say, you know, this will be the Pharaoh and we're not getting no justice, then I think that will call us to be more serious about establishing ourselves and understanding the law. Me, I do private security, and I tell people all the time that in my areas that I secure, when I have a contract, the police have to, they can't just go on my site. They can't just go, and that's in my area. And that's an example to me, like in the Jewish communities and Chinese communities, that if we took more, we had ownership, one of our constitutional rights, that if we own neighborhoods, we own areas, we would have a lot more say-so. Matter of fact, that was one of the, you couldn't even vote in the old times. You never explained this, how you couldn't even vote if you didn't have property. Now, they took that away, and we say we're voting, but to me, we're still not really measuring our voice because we don't have property. And that call to New Africa will be a call for us to establish ourselves, to have a district, and I think that America is really laughing at us because we still don't own. Even the rappers, you know, we give our money back straight to the car companies, Mr. Bentley or Lexus. We still haven't manufactured our own cars. So I'm not saying that I'm for the mistreatment, but I think that if we don't get serious about controlling our areas and controlling our life, that our life won't be valued. And we can cry, but we should be the voices of with history to support it, that we come from a strong history where our rights have been abused. And one of the key things that happened during slavery is we weren't able to keep, not even like other groups who may make 70, 30% of the dollar. We didn't keep the dollar at all. For 400 plus years, we couldn't own no money. We couldn't earn any money on a plantation, build a college. So I think we should have a strong voice to say we're tired of being sold people, or people in the sky, people who don't have any ownership of life, and that's the myth that they put on TV. So because once they put that myth that you don't own anything, then you have to come in there. Your people come in there, oh, I'm going to take it. And so that they, during the 90s, they created a, like, we'll do it at all costs. And that was one of the dangers that they did with Malcolm X. They instead of supporting the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's vision of what we were saying of by do for self and kind, they started to give the children by any means necessary. So by any means necessary is, you know, lingered in the culture. So now what you have with the thieves and corruptors, they're put on TV, you know, take it by any means necessary. Rob a bank robber. So what, like the brother said, this myth is hurting us because now these rappers are playing into the myth, the music is playing in the myth, the movies are playing in the myth, and now these young cops are scared. And you got to understand that there's also, even the cops, there's a revolution going on. The young cops and the old cops think completely different. I mean, a lot of old cops don't chill with young cops because young cops is playing the same games, listening to the same music, playing the same video games. Our young children are killing each other. We can't lie. We know that they're killing each other at 12, 11 years old in major cities. So I'm just saying that if we don't change that, like the brother said, proactive, the police, the EMS units only show up when there's an incident or to show up when there's a problem. They don't show up for the solution. So the solution should be rest with us. And I think that if the leaders become more proactive in terms of doing for self and kind, not just self, but education doing for self, property doing for self, coming together, I believe we have more power in our areas, and we won't be just crying and showing up when there's a problem and ready to break, destroy our own neighborhoods, our own areas that we got to go back to on Friday. And remember, when we leave on Friday, we're not being real with ourselves. That neighborhood becomes that destitute neighborhood that you cry in a rap or a song and say, man, I ain't never had nothing. But you might destroy this, your neighborhood during a riot. And, you know, that's what during the 60s, most of the ghettos that we transferred came through being plagued with bad leadership and seeing that Martin, Malcolm, people passed and got hit. And I think that we got to realize that this is a war. And no disrespect, you know, I don't think even if they saw Ferguson, if they give it, all the cops get fined or maximum, even go to jail, I don't think that will solve our problem at all. You know, I think that our problem deals with, like the brother said, of really sizing up this responsibility, responding to our ability. And I think you brothers are a sign of that. I want to say that, too, that this is a good time, too, because you brothers are a sign to just the moral consciousness that you're talking and represent, that if we keep this energy going and we go forward and produce works like Brother Farouk is doing, that I'm trying to do with my security company and providing jobs for these young troubled brothers, Imam Alfred, producing a media outlet, that we keep this, no matter how big these influences present themselves to be, that they're slowly dying. But have more energy to march to BET. That's what I want to say. We should have, if we have the ability to march to Ferguson, why don't we have the ability to shut down Black Entertainment Television, who's making more money off that your ignorance and your ability. And we can't always say, oh, well, somebody else, you know, because that means somebody's directing your life. So the imam called us to get the Apollo Theater, to get our culture, our avenues back. And I think that that's more important. And I'm sorry to say, I'm sorry, but I mean, I feel that's more important than all our energies going to one of the battles, and we're not paying no attention to the war. But inshallah, I greet you again. I hope I see you brothers real soon in the future. And I just wanted to say I'm tuning in to Religion Means a Lot, and I'm greeting you as your brother and friend. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Thank you, Brother Ismail. He's going to be one of the featured speakers tomorrow. He hasn't done notice yet. All Religion Means a Lot, where I give a public address. So I want all you to, let's tune in tomorrow at 3 o'clock on Religion Means a Lot. We have a lot of callers on the air today, and we have a caller that's calling from, let's see, from 917-530. You are on the air. And then we're going to get 347 and 856. We really thank you for calling in to Religion Means a Lot. Also, come back again Tuesday. Sister Amatullah Kadar and others will interview me. And any of you all can want to throw questions at me, feel free to do that too. This is not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. In fact, it's a highway of ideas. 917-530, you're on the air with Religion Means a Lot.
Hi, my name is Sonny Ikwe. I'm calling from New York City. I'm a friend of Ishmael Kadar. He asked me to call in today. I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm...
Hi, Sonny, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for asking. I'm very well. I just want to say that I think that what you gentlemen are putting together is extremely critical. I think that touching on what the other brother talked about regarding hip-hop and how, you know, our business acumen is represented by entertainers is limiting our capacity as Black men. I think that there's space for us in true business, true private equity, true capital markets, true multinational cross-border business. We don't believe it because we haven't seen it yet. And I think that this is the kind of groundswell that we need to show that we can see it and to show that it exists. So again, I'm tipping my hat in respect to all you gentlemen on this panel. This is critically needed in our community. We have to understand that, you know, a movement starts with one word, then two words, then a sentence, then a voice. And then we can have a true revolution, in a sense, and really put ourselves in a position we need to be in as a Black community.
It's powerful.
Brother Sonny, you know, I've heard so much about you for the past 2 years from Ismail. I thought you were actually a legend. So there is really a Sonny. You know, people say, is there an Easter Bunny? Well, there is no Easter Bunny, but there is a Sonny. And, you know, I was just talking to Brother Matt Yoon earlier today about private equity. and going into the capital markets. And he's also, like me, a salesman and a person who is a business person. We make our living persuading people. So we are going to talk to you, Sonny. We certainly will have more conferences. But remember, there are three ways that you get out of the minefield in America. Business, and that certainly consists of private equity. No one has all that money. Rupert Murdoch doesn't have billions. He's using other people's money. Then there is the trades. Then there is the professions. And if you have those three gateways, you can get out of the muck and mire of America. We have a caller from 347, my dear friend, Brother Imam Mubashir Akka. You're on the air with Religion Means Alive.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Imam. How you doing today, man?
Alaikum assalam.
Brother Imam, I want you to help us with that. I want to put this question to you because I know that you have heard the Imam say, when we look at read something, just don't look at it. Look into it. And I know that you are aware of the psychological damage of the minds of the world, Brother Imam. I know you're a student of that. Brother Imam, now when we look at this thing that happened in Ferguson, Brother Imam, that name, that's not the first time that name caused a big problem in the United States of America, Brother Imam. You was in New York, and I'm in New York. You remember that guy, Carla Ferguson, Brother Imam? What he
yes,
did
sir.
On the railroad, on the Long Island Railroad, Brother Imam? He killed a number of white people, Brother Imam, and Colin Ferguson. And then he went to court and represented himself. He represented himself, and they declared him crazy. But he represented himself. He might have said things that they couldn't accept him saying. But that name, Ferguson, and Brother Imam, you know the psychology of people. Things register in their subconscious mind real deep. And people who know who can put you or hypnotize you and put you under a spell, they can bring these things back out of you whenever they get ready. So when you hear that name Ferguson, Brother Imam, these people down in Ferguson in St. Louis, they are aware of that name, Brother Imam. And so what this gentleman did, this black man did here in New York, Colin Ferguson, he killed a lot of white people that was on that train. Going to Long Island to their classrooms and things, but man, he wrecked havoc. He wrecked havoc at one time in the great city called New York. He wrecked havoc. Ferguson, Brother Man, Ferguson. And so when they have this incident out in St. Louis, don't think they not connecting these things. They are establishing something, Brother Man, from memory, and they're establishing something to put fear in the heart and minds of black people. Because of what that guy Ferguson did, Brother Mount, and really, really, Brother Mount, they didn't kill him. They didn't kill him. He killed them, and they only wound up putting him in jail. So they go out here, and they thought it was an incident in this same name, that name, under that town Ferguson, and they have an incident with this. Didn't call for nothing to take that boy's life like that, but they did it. Look at the response they even got and brought to that same name, Brother Man. That same name, Ferguson. And I know you understand what I'm talking about, Brother Man. I know you know how to address these
yes,
issues.
Sir. Yes, sir.
I just want to bring this to your attention.
Imam, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your support. Yes, it is real. We see a cycle of revenge.
Yes.
Caucasians.
Yes.
You know, the Irish have never forgotten the British. The Scottish
yes,
people
ma'am.
Haven't forgotten the British. They're saying they want to be independent. So these Caucasians, these Europeans are people of revenge. That's why Satan himself feeds that revenge. So brother, I thank you for that. I remember Colin Moore defending himself.
Yes, yes, brother man.
One of the witnesses, the lady said, it was you, Colin Ferguson. He said, did you see a man get on the train with a briefcase? He said, would you call it Ferguson? So
I know you remember that, Brother Man. Yes, sir.
Minds, and they are angry, and they are seeking
yes.
revenge. Yes, sir.
Yes, Brother Man.
Thank you.
Yes.
We have a caller from Baltimore, Maryland. 411.
Huh?
On the air with Religion Meets Live.
I guys are the same.
Caller from Baltimore.
Was it by 5 pounds?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Hello.
Yes,
I wanted to call in. I wanted to call in to make a comment. I think that our situation right now. I think that I was hit. Excuse me. Let me introduce myself. My name is Tariq from Baltimore. I think our situation right now is very comparable to the Arabs of Muhammad's time. When established people in the world, such as the Romans and the Persians, seeing that the Arabs were coming out of the desert with a message, they laughed at them because they were people who wasn't known in the world for doing anything productive, because they were in the desert all the time fighting each other. And right now I think our situation is just about in the same way. We have a message. We have something in our heart that we want to bring to the world, but we have to materialize it. I think that technology is the way that we have to do this thing to materialize our thoughts. Especially with the growth in technology, I think that our thoughts can really have a massive impact on the world, and we need to move towards that direction.
Yes, sir. I believe that any of you all here would like to make a comment on Brother Tariq's we have the brothers, the technology, the media, finances. Anybody want to join in? This is an open discussion. Religion means a lot. But just before he says that, let me just identify for a moment that this is Religion Means a Lot. I'm your host, Sam Alford. And also, I want to invite all of you on Sunday to her lecture that I'm going to give. It's education for the 21st century. You know, we want to discuss. Continue with the
Yes, hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah. I think our work really needs to be established and being materialized in education, while mainly producing the mindsets that would produce feasible things through technology and through other material growth. We have to produce the mindset first through education. And I think that's been one of our main problems throughout our history, is that we haven't been able to educate ourselves. When you look at the people in Ferguson, for example, they have two people on their school board that are African-American in a majority African-American town. And just from that, given our history, that wouldn't help us to move forward in the future to produce things that are coming from our own thoughts.
I'll make a comment on what the brother is saying. From a technological standpoint, it's kind of hard to hear, but from a technology standpoint, it's definitely important that we utilize their platform, you know, and make sure that our voices are being heard. To get messaging across, because it's powerful, and that's the front lines of today's generation. I mean, it's technology. You think about it, it's those who have, they got technology. Those who don't, they're lost. I mean, whether you're looking for news information, you're looking for, you want the news 1 second ago. You don't want it, last week. You don't want it yesterday. You want it right now. You know, if you're looking for any kind of information. And I think the trick is that it's almost like it's something that is too costly, you know, and it's not. You know, we could definitely use technology to compete in a lot of areas if we train, you know, our students, our young people coming up, you know, to get involved. You know, I talk a lot about just knowing, you know, I was exposed to programming at a very early age. You know, I was exposed to programming at a very early age. And because of that, even when I used to play video games, I kind of knew that it was somebody writing code behind that made that happen. It wasn't like a mystery, you know, oh, how did this happen? This game is so fun. I mean, it was intriguing enough to want to.
Brother Rahman, you're advocating that we educate our children in science, technology, engineering, and math. I mean, we have a brother here from California. He's listening to the program, and this is his crusade. I know he's here.
Yeah.
We have a caller from 973-420. Caller, you're on the air. What religion means a lot.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum as-salam.
Yes, sir. Imam Alfred, enjoying your program, listening to the brothers that you have as the panel today, discussing some of the issues that we are facing in our community. And from my perspective, the key, one of the key components in us taking control of our lives to move forward in the future, in the present as well as the future, is to educate our children ourselves. See, we got to be about educating our own people, you know, and you can't trust the public school system anymore to educate your children. We will have to establish Islamic schools to educate our children, to bring about the type of mindset, the type of thinking that we would need to move this whole situation forward in the future. You know, if we don't do this, then we are just spinning our wheel. Because you can go into these schools of higher learning, and they train you, you understand what I'm saying? But the training that they give you is the training to continue to serve them. See, we will have to be independent thinkers. Imam W.D. Muhammad has taught us to be independent thinkers. So once we become independent thinkers, then we can go into the depths of what Allah has blessed us with and bring out the best of everything and all aspects of life. And this is what has to happen. If we don't establish schools in our community, and the young panel that you have, the parents that you have, the young people, they're young people. They have children in school at school. They have school-age children that they have in their household. So they should be pushing for the concept of us establishing Islamic school, good, strong Islamic school to educate our own children. And until we do that, brother, we're going to be coming back and forth complaining about the same situation that we're doing right now. So I would suggest that we push the concept, wherever we are, to establish strong Islamic school with the curriculum of Imam W.D. Muhammad in these schools, brother. And if we will do that, we will change the whole world. We will be the leaders of the world. This is the only way we can do it. We can't do it any other way. We will become the leaders of the world. I thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, I would like to ask the panelists, we go around the round, make your comments on that, the need for independent education. And I will hasten to add, I think the historical African-American colleges need to come into our hands, and the caller from Baltimore is quite right. We have to take a message of empowerment, of ownership, of leadership, of global establishment. I ask you all, I thank you so much for the broadcast. This is the nature for the past 3 years of what we're talking about. Panel, the verdict is yours.
I'll speak real quickly on this one, just because you know, it is something that is.
I think it's Brother Matt Yoon, but you all identify yourself. We have new people coming.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is Ikra Matt Yoon. My father, Pender Matt Yoon, before he passed, he was a very big proponent of one, studying under a man, W.D. Muhammad. He also studied the sciences, so he was a learned man, not necessarily by the standards of typical, you know, institutional education, but he was also on the charter and helped to bring about the Carter G. Woodson Charter School in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So education was his thing, and I didn't understand it at the time. Again, I'm young. I'm trying to find my way. I see him studying a lot. And he's always talking to me about some type of conspiracy theory. And it didn't make a lot of sense to me, you know. But as I get older, and I now have kids of my own who are going to these public schools, you know, and I'm seeing the type of things that are going on and the systemic way that they're going on. One of the big things, and I know this is a little off topic, but it comes into play with the whole scheme, you know, now – The big fad is, you know, the guys are looking like girls and the girls are looking like guys. So we're really confused. It's a scheme on our family unit. And so I totally agree. We definitely need our own schools. I guess me being a young person who's one trying to, you know, support a household, support a mother, you know, kids, things of that nature, while still trying to be active and I guess proactive in this type of endeavor. I guess at some point, I'm at a loss. So I do understand the value, but I don't know if that's necessarily my lane and what I'm best at. It may be something that I have to, you know, become good at. But I guess I'm at a loss. I do see the value in it now, though, because I have, again, school-age kids, and you can see clearly the scheme that's being played out in the schools.
Hey, Matt Malford.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm Lake.
Well, Lake
I don't. I don't want the brother to misunderstand what I'm saying. I don't mean that each one of us as individuals should establish school. What we need to do, we need to impregnate the thinking of our people to want this concept. This is a concept that we have to put into the mind and the thinking of our people, of all of us. You don't have to be a part of the people that physically establish the school, but make sure that this is our thinking. This is the thinking that we have, just like during the days of Master Elijah Muhammad. The thinking back then was do for self, and every Muslim preached that everywhere you go. You hear that. You understand what I'm saying? This is how we got to make these things happen in our lives today. We got to impregnate the thinking of the people, put this, indoctrinate this into their mind and these concepts into the thinking of the people, and then this is how it comes about. People have to will this here. You understand? And in order for them to will this here, they will have to repeatedly hear these things, these terminology in the air, in the environment that brings about a new thinking in their mind to want these things in our community. Then it will happen.
I appreciate that, brother, and that definitely helps me out. I definitely will, you know, make my greatest effort to preach it, you know, and put it out there in the atmosphere so others, you know, who may be more inclined to that line of work, and again, I may have to help as well, but so they can, you know, start thinking as well.
That's right.
Any other brother? We also still have brother. We have brother Sonny on, who's an equity, private equity person. I think that there's a lot of energy here to be placed, and the responsibility lies in the lap of the business people. See, things happen in America. People can say what they want about the Koch brothers or Koch brothers or whatever they call themselves. Those men are worth billions of dollars, and they're able to finance what they want in the world. We have to get like that. We can finance education. We can help establish education. We can create the kind of people we want to create. That's the beauty of America. And also understand that the ugliness of America, others have an opportunity to destroy you. So let's get in the fight, people. You know, you are listening to Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred. If you want to join the conversation, just dial 805-727-7013. We have about 17 more minutes on the air. And I want to now turn our attention to the convention. 2014, to me, was the greatest convention. Why it was so great? Because I met you all. And each and every one of you, including Brother Sonny, is a part of the mission of Imam W.D. Muhammad. What I mean by that? You all are the people that will establish what Imam Muhammad wanted, and that was to establish our people. That is, establish us as an educational body, establish us as a business body, establish us as a cultural body, establish us as a governmental body. So as we go with these next 16 minutes, I'd like to hear from Brother Bad Yoon, Brother Rockman, and others about why you think this could, what's your reflection on the convention, and where you see the community around W.D. Muhammad joint going, and you can join by others. Anybody else have any questions or comments, feel free to dial 805-727-7013. Those are already on the air. Listen via phone. Just press 1 on your phone, and you will be served.
That's how I'll start. This is Brother Fareed Rahman. My reflections on the convention was, I mean, I had a wonderful experience. I really didn't have an agenda outline to go into the convention, except for we just wanted to go. I guess that would be our agenda. I went up there with Brother Ikra Mayun and also another brother, young brother, Nasif Majid. And all we wanted to do was just get there and interact with the believers. And that's what we wanted, you know, to do. And from doing that, I mean, just getting that energy back from the believers, no matter what, you know, talking to each other about what we're involved in, or getting words of encouragement, or just being able to relate and being able to see someone else that is doing well or striving to do well, it ignites, you know, and be able to motivate us to continue to do what we're doing. But there was a lot of connections that were made, a lot of strong relationships would probably, you know, would develop from the convention. And just even on the line of what we're talking about, I mean, you'll find yourself getting into conversations with brothers about things that are happening inside our community, inside what's going on in the world. And one brother, he was quoting me, ma'am, I mean, and it just touched on what we were saying. I want to say, you know, and I take it that it was coming from Imam Muhammad, because he said it. That's what the man said. He said the man told us our schools to be bigger than our masters and our businesses to be bigger than our schools. And it made sense to me, you know, because, yeah, I definitely want to support our schools, and I want us to have our own schools. And I want to be able to help in that. And I know we're going to need funding to do that. You know, we need people out here that's getting resources to bring back to the community to do those things, and then the educators can educate. But just hearing, you know, the topics that we're having, that we're talking about, and I'm just relating that just came about from a conversation from a brother I had met from the first time at the convention, you know. So it was an overall excellent experience, and I'm looking forward to continuing to support the convention in any way that I can.
Thank you, Brother Rockman, and all the rest of you, just feel free to jump in here and be taking the discussion to another level of convention. And to me, I see the convention as just not of us gathered together. I would have never met you all if I hadn't gone to the convention. Just in an informal gathering, you all in the hallway. I said, who are these sharp billionaires here? Lo and behold, we have competitors with Bill Gates. And believe you me, if we can compete on the basketball court, football field, the baseball diamond, we can compete in business. We can compete in education. We can compete in culture. And we damn sure can compete in government.
Agreed. This is Ikra Madyun again. I would say that I was a little conflicted when I initially got there, because I had a memory of the convention back when the imam was alive, and I guess the last time I was there, it was, you know, just as a kid. So everything was so big at the time. Fast forward to now, I've grown up, and I guess the world has gotten a lot smaller, and, you know, I've gotten bigger. But I think personally it was the most influential or the best experience that I've had. I've learned so much, been able to meet you brothers, and I also, again, learned that I do have a place in the community, and that the pioneers, the trailblazers, are looking to us to continue the work. So I have a refound sense of responsibility, and I think that in itself is empowering. So I appreciate you pioneers, you older brothers that have, you know, that have been in the... I'm sorry?
And we appreciate you greatly.
Oh, yes, sir, yes, sir. But I'm ready to work. And I think one of the things that we need to do is we need to make sure that we don't forget about, and I've never been in the nation. I was born in 80, so I missed that. My parents came into the religion in 75, so they came right under the Imam Muhammad. But I think we need to reach back to some of the things that the nation, the good that they did, because they were very organized. They were about self. They were about, you know, making sure, you know, being their own walis rather than you know, letting the kids go out into, you know, in society, having, you know, anybody mold and shape them. So I do, and I'm guilty of it, but I do understand that we need to bring back some of those principles and be more active in this great religion and promoting this great religion way of life. I don't do it because I want you to be a Muslim. I do it because I feel like it's the best medicine for the African-American and all mankind, because Allah says it is. So that's my reflection, and I appreciate this opportunity and you all.
Thank you. And Brother Rahman, and anybody else like to jump in, just go right in. Yes, Brother Rahman. And any others that are on the line.
Well, I've commented, so I don't know if the other brothers on the line or not.
Okay, let's turn now to the future of the community, Imam W.D. Muhammad, and the future of African Americans, and where you all see the African American people going. And this, even though these are very difficult times, I think these are great opportunities. So I want you all to talk to us about opportunities as you see them overcoming the difficulties in the bright future that we have here in America.
Sure. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, you know, I'm an optimist, so I really see this future bright. And I think the generation that is coming up, you know, whether it's my generation and the ones below, I think we have a real good understanding of who we are. I mean, we probably, like Dick would just mention, probably first or second generation, you know, Muslims, but we know a lot about, you know, our history. We know a lot about we came from out of the Nation of Islam, but we still value that process as well. You know, we respect leadership, and we know, you know, what our ultimate destiny is to be because of, you know, the language and the leadership of Imam Muhammad. So we're sitting here now just as a testament to the work that has already took place before us, and we're ready and we're willing to compete. And we're competing with Al-Islam as our, you know, as a forefront. So that right there tells you that, you know, we feeling like we're supposed to be the best at whatever we're doing. So I can't but, you know, be optimistic about the future for us and feel like, you know, it's promised to us, because that's what, you know, Allah tells us in the Quran. So I'm an optimist.
Well, we have with us also Brother Sonny. He's not a member of the community, but he's a supporter of the community. Brother Sonny is a private equity investment company owner. And Brother Sonny, I want you can add to jump into the conversation. We don't exclude anyone. And far as I'm concerned, you're a member of Imam W.D. Muhammad's community. If you seek progress for African American people, good for everybody else, you're a member automatically. So, Brother Sonny, if you'd like to join us with a comment, feel free.
Yeah, I think I'm very optimistic about, you know, African American growth going forward. I think that they're, in a weird way, touching on what the one brother said about Ferguson earlier, you know, that's their only form of attack now. That's the only way they can touch our fingers now, because we've advanced so much. And now we're getting an ownership mindset, which is kind of a nightmare scenario for them. Once we can learn how to really galvanize all our resources, our human capital, actual capital, knowledge capital, then it becomes a real competition. That's using intimidation tactics to prevent. But because they're doing that, it gives me hope that we're moving more rapidly towards the right direction.
Yes, I agree with you. You know, what they say, when the tough get going, get tougher. You know, nobody's going to give up a $1.3 trillion market. You know, there are people who have vested interest in seeing us dumb, stupid, hungry, and out of doors. That prison industrial complex industries that make billions of dollars on us. So $1.3 trillion, it's going to be a fight for that. You know, there are people who make $26 billion selling us chicken. Don't think they're going to give that up. We're going to have to fight for that. We're going to have to compete for that. We're going to have to work together. So, you know, if you ever watch Wild Kingdom or one of those shows on TV, you see how these animal herds protect themselves from predators. We have to think the same way. I believe we're going to be victorious. I agree with Dr. King. We're going to get to the promised land. We have 5 minutes, and I'd like for each of the panelists and guests just wrap up and tell us what you think. But I don't want you to forget tomorrow at 3 o'clock on Religion Means Alive. We're going to have an initial address by Brother Ismail Kadar. And we have another caller from somewhere. It's an unidentified caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is J-Law. How are you doing?
How you doing, J-Law?
Yeah, well, I have this very bad problem. I've been masturbating, and it's really been taking a toll on my life.
Well, Jay, you go on and do what you're doing, do best, but you know what I'm going to do. Okay, so when you open the airways up, you open up to everybody. Freedom of speech. Go ahead, next person. We certainly not going to masturbate, that's for sure. All right, let's go. Okay, we have another caller from Arkansas. Hey, the airways are open. You got all kinds of
people. Yeah.
Calling you on the air for 501. Here it comes. Caller? All right, let's conclude. We have about 4 more minutes on the air. That caller is gone. Yes, Brother Madhu and Brother Rahman, Brother Sonny, we all sum it up. We had a little laughter, too, I tell you. Everybody in the mental hospital is allowed out at this time. There's a song that used to come out called The Freak Come Out at Night. So I guess this is the time. It's getting dark outside, y'all. Oh, at least
this is
after. Religion Means Alive. We are not an uptight program, so you can expect all types to come through. Okay, let's now, Brothers Madhune, Brother, all the rest of you will please make comments.
Okay, again, this is Ikra. Again, I appreciate meeting you all. I'm encouraged by you all. I hope I can encourage someone as you encourage me. I think we have a lot of work to do, but I'm very optimistic. The fact of the matter is that we do have a lot of work to do. So we've got work to do. We definitely we can be effective because, you know, we are pretty low as a community, if you will. So, you know, the world looks at us in a pretty jaded manner. So we've got an opportunity here, and I'm optimistic that we can make a difference. Assalamu alaikum. I appreciate you all.
Did we hear from Brother Rahman? I think we have another caller right here. Brother Rahman.
All right. I would just echo the sentiments of Brother Ikra, and along with the fact that you know, we do have just good people, you know, I mean, good brothers and sisters all over, and you know, in our generation and older, you know, doing good work. So, you know, we got Brother Sonny on the line, and we also, all of us know other brothers and sisters like that. So we're going to continue to work with each other, and through that, it's just a matter of how it things are just beautiful for us out here. The time is now, and you can't help but to feel that good spirit and be able to feel like success is coming our way. So
Don't forget, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, we have 2 more callers here. We're going to hear from area code tools 270 and 501. Paulie, on the air.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I love the show. I just wanted to ask a question, and I'll let you guys take it off the air. I'll go ahead and hang up then. But there's a caller before who was saying something about a problem he was having. I've got the same problem with masturbating, and I don't know how to stop it.
Well, I would refer you to the dead psychiatrist. Okay. 501 Eric Cole. Seems that all they're all
just
come
like
on at night. So let's please.
No, I will. I called earlier, but we were disconnected. I just wanted to tell you that. I accidentally, clicked the button.
This guy. Probably not. Peace be on our noble and honorable listeners. I think we have boiled up tonight. May the creator of the heavens and earth bless each and every one of you. Whatever problems you may have, whatever rejection you may come up with, peace be on our noble and honorable listeners. We're listening once again to What Religion Means Alive. We'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. We're obviously making progress. People have nothing better to do than call in and mess with us. So we have fun, y'all. Thank you.